1-2 pitch. Red Sox win the World Series.
This time Manning going deep for Beckham Jr. Can he catch it? He did!
You know, Tom, I was actually just thinking the other day that the level of competition in the NHL in the Eastern Conference wasn't high enough. So it's actually good. It's a good parity move for the NHL, moving Patrick Kane from the West to the East. I mean, I think that's just a lot better for the power balance. I mean, the Western Conference playoffs are going to be a bloodbath, man. I mean, just so many high-flying teams going at it in the West. Like, so many superstars over there.
So much going for Connor Bedard, right? That's what you're talking about. Not the cup, right? Or are you talking about
reality?
Cup?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I mean, there are big prizes at both ends of the spectrum in the NHL this year, and the Eastern Conference is fighting for one at one side, and the entire West is fighting for one at the other side.
Pretty much different things, but playing for, a prize.
I guess for
either side, I guess, you know. Yeah, I mean, the deadline has not even. When's the deadline? Friday?
The deadline is Friday. So as you're listening to this on Thursday, hopefully we get this out Thursday.
I mean, there's been some major fireworks. There's been some major fireworks already. I can't even imagine like what we're in for. I don't know who else is still out there, really. Well, Carlson's still available, but I don't know how hot talks are there. I think that he might be staying a Shark. But the biggest news is probably my favorite non-Ranger player of all time is now a New York Ranger. And it's pretty amazing. Funny story, or funny little tidbit. When I was younger, really, my two favorite non-Rangers were Kane, because of how good he was at everything, and he was American. And then I loved Tarasenko, because of how I thought he was so underrated, and I wanted in his draft year, I wanted the Rangers to draft him. And instead, we drafted Rangers legend, Hartford Wolfpack legend, Dylan Mikelrath.
Yes.
So that's a legendary miss in Rangers draft history, and that always pissed me off a little bit, because we could have really used him in that cup run against the Kings and in those years. But you know, better late than never, I guess. We got both these guys, and now our top six is looking like one of the best top six in the league.
Well, it's funny, I have another story in that same vein, but before we get there, just for those who aren't in the know, I try to keep it inclusive for the non-hockey stratosphere listeners that we have.
Absolutely.
Patrick Kane, you know him. I'm sure you do. He's the greatest American-born player of all time. Won 3 Stanley Cups in 5 years with the Chicago Blackhawks. Hasn't been quite as much of a difference maker since that last cup in 2015, but is still, you know, one of the most highly regarded names in hockey. Was dealt to the New York Rangers 5 days ahead of the deadline on Tuesday, so 4 days ahead of the NHL trade deadline, for a second round pick and a fourth round pick, and that second round pick becomes a first if the Rangers make the conference finals. Which,
as well as 2 prospects that came out a little bit after the initial announcement.
Oh yeah, and you got a defenseman out of that too, right?
Yeah, who I don't even know his name. I don't even care, because we have Patrick Kane.
Yeah.
Also, if you're not too in tune with the hockey sphere, you might be saying, how did the Rangers get this legendary player, greatest American of all time, still, you know, a good player, for not even a first round pick, or not even Kaapo-Kakko, which people thought we might have to give up. But it what happened was, it eventually just came down to Kane was not being traded anywhere but New York.
Yep.
And I don't know exactly how that became public. I think it started to come out a little bit with the Kane statement, which we've referenced on the pod before, of how disappointed he was in seeing Tarasenko go to the Rangers and how he thought it kind of closed that window there. I think that gave it away, but there was a lot of buzz about him going to Edmonton and playing with McDavid. There's a lot of talk about him going to LA because LA's got a good team this year that is a few pieces away. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, no, the only way he was not going to wear the Blackhawks sweater for the rest of his career was if he was going to New York. And this is another example, I think, of how the Rangers have an edge over the league, over every single team, simply by playing in New York and being the team in New York, and had playing in MSG, because the Islanders don't get the same treatment. The Devils don't get the same treatment. And mm-hmm. we've seen this already with going all the way back to Artemi Panarin coming to the Rangers for less money.
Yeah,
it's being played out. And really, like, as Chris Drury, owner of Colony Pizza, if people are not aware, the GM of the New York Rangers, deserves
crazy, man. I had Colony for the first time a couple weeks ago, actually. I went to visit Yes.
Are you what?
Yeah, I went to visit Nick in Stanford, and I had my first Colony ever.
I did
get the hot oil. Because
okay,
I was when I go to a new place, I like to get the signature thing. Portnoy's review, actually, he preferred the regular cheese, but mm-hmm. the hot oil seemed right up my alley, and it was excellent. I will say it is like in a different category from like regular pizza, especially like New Haven pizza. So it's like it's not even really a contender for like the Connecticut Pizza Crown, because it like. It built its own lane. Like it's kind of like Nintendo going up against like Sony and Microsoft. Like Sony and Microsoft, that's like the big four of New Haven Pizza, are gonna butt heads forever. But you have like Nintendo and Colony being like, we're going to etch out our own share of the market, doing things that you guys aren't doing, and you get things from us that you can't get from the other guys, and you can get things from the other guys that you can't get from us. Mm-hmm. But we have our own little undisputable corner of the market here. And that's what Colony's doing. And honestly, it's pretty cool. It's very agree. Fun pizza.
My parents hate Colony for that exact reason, because they can't divorce that it's in its own lane. Like mm-hmm. they can't separate it. They're like, it's pizza. It's like, it's shitty pizza. I'm like, no, it's like, it's bar pizza.
Right.
It's a different category. It's like, my dad's a huge music fan. I try to like explain it in music terms. It's like, well, like you had the blues and then it broke off into rock and roll and then mm-hmm. it broke it. And like, he just doesn't get it. He goes, it's just like, I'd rather have Pepe's. I'm like, but like you said, it's in a completely different stratosphere. However, you can appreciate both, and there's a time and place for both.
Totally. I went in to pick it up, and while I didn't eat it there, I got to drink in the atmosphere in which this pizza is meant to be consumed in, mm-hmm. and it fits it perfectly.
Like, oh, for that, sure.
It
for
is
sure.
well done, not well done cooking-wise, but just pristinely done and attentively done bar pizza. Exactly. It is very, very good.
You want to pay attention to the games that are on, and the audience that you're with, not necessarily the pizza, but you want the pizza to still be good and do the job. And that's, I think, what they do, and they accomplish it perfectly.
It's a pizza that doesn't really make itself a spectacle. Like, they don't have any like yeah. over the top signature pies other than the hot oil, which is just like another fun take on the cheese. Mm-hmm. Doesn't take up too much table real estate. It's nice and thin. It's easy to like it's got good structure to it, so like you're not using two hands to eat it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to like be too attentive. It does what it set out to do very well, and mm-hmm. I was impressed in that regard for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something I would not have, with you growing up in Connecticut, would not have expected that, but it makes sense. I mean, there's no, I don't think you guys have a Colony up in Danbury, and like New Haven, there isn't one.
No, we're not in New Haven. We're not in New Haven County. We're not in the Valley, and we're like just far enough away from like the Gold Coast, like in Stanford and everything, to not really have that in our periphery.
Yeah. 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 So I guess that makes sense, knowing your history, Flip. Wow.
Yeah. So that's that. But what were we, Or we well so, we got onto so, Colony from Chris Drury, who he has done miracles on me.
As he's been performing a lot of those, I guess, recently.
Man, for how many former players we've seen absolutely destroy their image with the fans by taking on a GM role.
Mm-hmm.
Like Chris Drury is the first one to like he was a great player, but he's not like being canonized in Rangers lore good, but now he is.
And he also took over in that, like, I'll call it mini collapse of what happened with the Tom Wilson stuff. Mm-hmm. And then where they just went out there and they fired Davidson and our GM, Jeff Gordon. And they were doing a great job. I was like, no, like we're actually going to hit the self-destruct button here because James Dolan's an idiot.
Yep.
And luckily, you know, Drury was being brought on as a protege for Gordon, and he's done very well, but we flirted with danger there big time because of the most idiotic player in the NHL. But I digress. But the second GM of the Rangers deserves a lot of credit for this. And you might think, who is the second GM of the New York Rangers? But that man is Artemi Panarin, because he is linked to our two biggest trade pieces that we've gotten this year. He's boys with Vladimir Tarasenko, and he has unbelievable chemistry and played with Kane for 2 years. At the beginning of his career, he won the Rookie of the Year with him, and they were just, that line was just a point machine. So I have to give Panarin some credit here for getting these two guys that, at the very least being like, Drury, like, yo, these guys are pretty good, and like, I like them. They'll do really well with us. And I think chemistry in hockey is very, very important and goes very unnoticed. I think a lot these, you know, you get all this talent onto a team, but then the next question is like, how are they going to gel? How is this? Like, I think, some people I was seeing, they might have just been trolls, but with all these moves that were being made, they were like, oh, but this is going to mess up the chemistry. I think it was like one of the moves that the Bruins made. People were like this, but they're rolling. Why are you going to mess up the flow and that type of stuff? And right now, the Rangers, like the questions that they have are good questions or good problems to have. It's like, well, you know what the lines are going to be pretty much. First line is going to be Mika with Kreider, Tarasenko. Second line, it's going to be Panarin, Trocheck, and Kane. Third line will be the kid line. And then you got a strong fourth line in Goudreau, Mott, and Jimmy Vesey. That's fine. Our problem right now is like, who are we going to put on the power play? Like, we're going to have to put one of Tarasenko, Trocheck, or Kreider on power play too. And that's a great first world hockey team problem to have. Like, and to kind of answer that question, because a lot of people I think that Kreider's gonna be slotted down, but I think the Rangers value his size in the front of the net on the power play so much, and there's so much chemistry there already. I think Tarasenko is gonna be slotted down to power play too. And then Kane will take over there. So our power play would be Mika, Kreider, Panarin, Kane, and then Adam Fox, QB1. And that makes me horny. That's basically my takes on this. Because I mean, what is there to really analyze other than the Rangers bent the Blackhawks over because they could.
Yeah,
and Kane wanted to be a Ranger all the way, and he's going to improve this team, and they're going to go for it now. Further a little bit, it makes decisions down the road a little bit more difficult to make, because you have a lot of guys coming up with contracts, and you got to figure out who you're paying. But you know what? Go for it. The East is a freaking murder gauntlet, so you got to stock up while you can.
Yeah, you do, man. So looking at this trade from the perspective of a Bruins fan. Originally, we looked at the Tarasenko trade a couple of weeks ago and thought, okay, so the Rangers are out of the Patrick Kane sweepstakes.
Right.
Then they go out, they move around some pieces to fill the cap room for a Patrick Kane trade. It feels like the trade loses momentum over the weekend. It felt like going into Tuesday, we were off at least five straight days of like, okay, the deal's close to done. Like the deal will be done by the end of the day. We had like close to a week of that. And it really looked like either the Blackhawks were going to take whatever the Rangers were offering, because the Rangers knew that Patrick Kane's teams that he was willing to waive his no movement clause for was one team long. So the offer was never going to be impressive. And what I thought was going to happen was I thought the Rangers were going to make a very underwhelming offer because they knew that they had leverage and the Blackhawks were going to decide that he was not worth trading for that. Mm. And I think what ended up happening is the holdup that you got over the weekend was that I'm sure that Drury was making offers, you know, as soon as those reports started to break on like Thursday or Friday. I'm sure there were offers on the table at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But as the days started to go along, I really started to think this offer is terrible. And despite Patrick Kane shaking everyone in the front office by their shirt collars and saying, trade me to New York, I don't care what you get back. You put me mm-hmm. through all of this. This is the only team I will waive my clause for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ultimately a franchise that was clearly unafraid of pissing off Patrick Kane, because they've done it every day for the last year and a half,
mm-hmm.
was going to hold on to him and say, no, we'll take half a season of you over this menial return, and then you can go wherever you want at the end of the year when your contract is up. That is kind of what I thought was going to end up happening. But as it turns out, the aforementioned collar shaking that Patrick Kane was doing in the front office in Chicago turned out to be effective enough, and they end up pushing that deal through for a gross underpay, what most people would consider.
Yeah, it almost seems too that the conditional first was like, all right, we'll do it. Like, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, we'll gamble. If you guys probably have a good shot at making the Eastern Conference Finals. If we can get a first out of this, it's yep. better than losing him next year, because we're not going to pay him.
Exactly.
So I think that they were like, you know what? Yeah, sure. Because honestly, like, it's unless Kane is like, get me out of here. Because
mm-hmm.
it didn't really seem like he was like, I need to be out of here. It seemed like he was like, yeah, if you get me out of here, you might have seen more stuff than I did, but it just seemed like it was like, I don't want to go anywhere but New York. But I don't necessarily know if he like wanted to leave Chicago, you know what I mean?
Right.
So unless he was really adamant about getting out of there, and like, because he wanted to play some competitive hockey this spring, mm-hmm. That's a different case. But I think the first definitely sweeten the pot with the condition there.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, ownership looking down at the management office, I think if I'm looking down as an owner at my GM group and seeing that they couldn't get a first round pick for Patrick Kane, I mean, that's like pretty fireable, like in its own right. So I think that might have been, like you said, kind of like the consolation, like, all right, we at least like, I'm not even going to stretch words and say a respectable return, but mm-hmm. we got a return that isn't laughably bad enough to get us fired.
Right.
So that's kind of what I thought about that. Right. That was my mindset this whole weekend and into the day where the trade came in as a Bees fan. Made a little bit easier by the fact that the Bees made some moves of their own ahead of the deadline. And we still have a couple of days before the deadline. The Rangers, I think, are clearly done. I think the Bruins may still have one more trade in them, especially in the wake of this Kane news. But as I'm looking at this depth chart, the Bruins this past week traded for defenseman Dmitry Orlov, from the Washington Capitals, along with Garnet Hathaway from the Capitals as well. He is a right wing who is going to help solidify that bottom six offense a little bit better. But even with the wake of this Kane news and seeing how much star power is on Broadway right now, I'm looking at this Orlov trade and I'm looking at how deep this Bruins roster is. And I really came to the conclusion that you can sit around and get upset that other teams got better around you, but like, I'm looking at this Bruins lineup and there are no holes in it, which is, I mean, if you can get out of a trade deadline watching teams around you get better, but you improved yourself, I don't know if there's a team to feel better about or to feel good about putting up against this star-studded Rangers team than the Boston Bruins. If you go front to back, Orlov solidified this blue line in a way that we got Hampus Lindholm at the beginning of this season. That helped so much in its own right. It's part of the reason why we're on such a heater this entire season, is getting some legit extra help on that blue line to go with McAvoy. Because last year we were, it was kind of, Charlie was holding the blue line down and then it was kind of duct tape otherwise. And Charlie was good enough to keep us in the top half of the league defensively, even with that being the case. But we had Hampus Lindholm at the beginning of this season. Now, yeah, Dmitry Orlov to the mix, who in his first two games has 2 goals and 2 assists. He is playing a 200-foot game like maybe no defenseman we've seen on the Bruins so far this year. I know it's a very small sample size, but Orlov had a goal last night in last night's game, Tuesday night's game, where he is just taking the puck up the middle, going through the teeth of the offense or the teeth of the other team's defense, stepping across that blue line, letting one rip, and it's top Chad. No one even saw it coming. I mean, it's like, I hate to make this comparison, but it really felt like Bobby Orr-esque out there, just holding down that blue line and going up and ripping shots, helping the offense as well as the defense. So that's a huge, huge piece to add to this team to pair up with Hampus Lindholm to give you a line one caliber, line two on your defense. I mean, we have, the Bruins have 7 legit defensemen and they have a top 4 that any one of those 4, all 4 of those guys are top liners. So that blue line is vastly improved over the course of this season and last off season. You go back up to the offense, you have your goal machine centerpiece and David Pastrnak, who's 2nd in odds for the Hart Trophy right now, right behind Connor McDavid. You have David Krejci, who's holding down that second line for you. You go up to that first line, you have the best two-way forward in the NHL, as always, Patrice Bergeron. Marchand is on one of his best stretches of the entire season. He's a goal machine lately, too. And then the emergence of Jake DeBrusk this season, too, man. Like, a legit top liner, and that's not something that had been true at any point in his career prior to this season. I mean, this offense, this defense, just the number of ways that they can go out and beat teams. They have size, they have speed, they have shooting ability, they have lockdown defense. And then you add to all of that the fact that they are playing in front of the runaway Vezina favorite in Linus Ullmark this year. Really, all you can do is focus on what you can do to make your team the best it can be. The Boston Bruins right now are sitting at 47-8-5. I mean, this has been an unbelievable season front to back. They've won games in every way imaginable. They're all heart on top of everything, too. They're playing for each other. They're playing for Berge. They are playing for all the right reasons. New York's got a lot of star power. Like, that top six is ridiculous. But if you add together the things that win you playoff series, the Bruins have all of it in spades. And going into this trade deadline, can you add another forward? Sure. But going into this trade deadline and the last stretch of the regular season and going into the playoffs, if you name something that can carry a team into a deep playoff run and keep them going and motivated and having the talent to beat these top teams in the East, the Bruins have all of it.
Yeah, I think right now, top to bottom, Rangers have the best offense. Mm-hmm. And top to bottom, the Bruins have the best defense.
Yep.
So
and the Rangers defense and the Bruins offense, those aren't slouch units either.
They aren't slouches. No, yeah. Exactly. So I think we right now in a head-to-head matchup are a very interesting pair.
Mm-hmm.
With our strengths versus our weakness. And honestly, how I view the two top teams in the in the Eastern Conference right now.
Those are definitely
so. Therefore, the NHL.
Yes, exactly. I think there are four teams in the East that could win the Stanley Cup this year. It is the Bruins, the Rangers, the Hurricanes, and the Maple Leafs. I think anybody else in the East doesn't really have the firepower to get past any of those teams. I will say, if we were to preview a potential Bruins Rangers Eastern Conference final, because that does feel. It feels like we're on a collision course toward each other now. It's been ever since that trade broke. It's been hard to mention one without the other going down. You're either talking about the Rangers who land a Patrick Kane, and you're looking at it from a Rangers perspective and say, okay, this is a team that can compete with the Bruins now. And then as the Bruins, you're looking at the rest of the Eastern Conference and you're saying, okay, maybe the biggest threat to us right now is the New York Rangers adding this extra star power. So it feels like we're on a collision course toward each other.
We are. This Saturday, we face off.
That's right. Yeah, we get the Saturday matinee at TD. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if you really look at how these two teams are matching up, the Rangers have everything but size. And that
not on the blue line. Our blue line's massive.
Yeah, true. But up front, I mean, Patrick Kane's tiny. Mika's tiny. Like,
yeah, Mika's not tiny. Panarin's tiny, but he's strong.
Sure.
Kreider's huge.
Yep.
Hedl's big. Kako's big. But I mean, I wouldn't say size is an issue.
Sure. But like looking at how these two teams would match up with each other in like corner battles and mm-hmm. controlling the neutral zone, like I think I like our chances there.
I would give you guys the I don't even know how to describe it. The I'll give you the dirty areas, maybe like the or like the bashing style of it. Like I think you guys do really good job with that. Mm-hmm. And speaks to how good defensively you guys are as well. So you guys are a battle regardless, like on the puck, off the puck, on the boards.
We also don't give up or stop hustling literally ever, which mm-hmm. has not been true of Bruins teams of the past. Mm-hmm. Against the Calgary Flames last night, scoring in the last 5 seconds of overtime to get the win, coming off their fourth game in 6 days of a West Coast road trip in overtime, still hustling, going out and trying to get that extra point, an extra point which they do not need. And would be fine to give up to a Flames team that is in the wild card hunt. Like they just don't care. Like they're going out every night and they are playing to the ends of their ability every single night. Like, and honestly, like after watching this team that has coasted on its top heavy talent for so many years in a row under, yep. you know, under previous coaching, it's been amazing to see, because like I guess that's the Jim Montgomery difference. Like that's the only major difference between last year and this year, other than David Krejci and the emergence of Jake DeBrusk, which are both very important. But I mean, this is a team that's playing for each other this year, and that cannot be understated, especially in a playoff setting.
Yeah, for sure.
So like
anything that you are nervous about, want to see get better going into playoffs, because I have one for the Rangers, but I'm interested, given the position that the Bruins are in right now, how well you guys are, how complete of a team you guys are, where do the Bruins worry you, or where do you see the Achilles heel being?
So my answer to that this year and the last couple of years has been bottom six scoring. But okay. I feel like yep. this year we've solidified, like, guys in the bottom six have roles now. Like Charlie Coyle is the center of that third line, and that third line scores now. Nick Foligno, after being literally useless last year when he showed up, is scoring goals now. AJ Greer is on the upswing. I mean, he's a guy that was barely even going to make the team coming into this year. I was watching him play preseason and just shove it up people's asses. and being like, this guy could be a piece this year. I mean, you have the top line talent to put Taylor Hall on the third line now. That's a guy mm-hmm. who won a Hart Trophy. Like this second line with Zaka and Pasta and Krejci is giving you so much production that you can afford to move Taylor Hall, who's going to be a second line talent at the minimum at most other NHL on most other NHL rosters. You can go out, you can throw him out there with Charlie Coyle and like have a really productive third line. So it's like guys like Noshek are contributing now too. Like we have Garnett Hathaway now, who is going to be a great third liner or fourth liner for us. Like it's always a concern. I think it's a concern for every team. I don't think any team is super, super confident that lines 3 and 4 are going to go out there and consistently score goals for them. But this year, more than other years, I'm optimistic about the bottom six scoring, because boy, was that our undoing being so top heavy the last 3-4 years. And it starts to show when you play complete teams like Carolina, like we played last year.
Mm-hmm.
But we're in a better place with that than I think we've ever been.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I'd agree with you. Bottom six scoring is so important come playoff.
Oh, all right. Well, let's play the wait for Tom to come back game.
Can you hear me?
Now I can.
Cool. You bastard. With the Kane talk and everything, all the good stuff I have to say about the Rangers, I was actually going to give us like some critiques, and you cut me out.
Okay, well, I got you back now.
So go ahead, please.
Right. You're not hearing any.
Tell
echo
me how you
or
guys
anything, are you right now?
Am I back? What?
Are you hearing any echo or anything right now?
No.
Okay, cool. Because
no echo or anything.
My headphones. So I'm raw dogging it now. So go ahead.
Oh, there we go. I don't know where I cut out, but basically, I view the Rangers blue line being our Achilles heel right now, because we're just giving up too many goals and making it too easy on offenses that like we probably won't even be seeing in the playoffs. They're like not even that caliber. And I especially want to see it better against, like, I think we've lost you guys twice this year already. I could be wrong. We've lost to New Jersey a few times. We've handled Carolina okay. But these are all teams that currently have more points than us. And like, I want to see us performing better against, because those are playoff cup contender teams. So I just think for a blue line that has Adam Fox, Keandre Miller, Jacob Trouba, Ryan Lindgren, I and Igor Shesterkin in net, I just feel like that they're leaving Igor in really dangerous situations often and relying on him to bail them out. And I just don't like that. I want to see them helping out Igor a little bit more.
Yeah.
As much as I love seeing him making ridiculous saves.
Well, we put Allmark in one of those situations for the first time in a very long time last night. I believe Linus Allmark made 54 saves.
Wow.
Against the Calgary Flames. Bruins won it 3-2. I mean, he kept us in the game. I mean, the offense and the defense kind of just was, in the first half of the game, was really lagging behind, feeling the jet lag and the 4 games in 6 days. And Allmark was there to back it up. And it just shows you, like I said before, the Bruins have won games in every way you can think of this season. That was the one that we were missing, where like the rest of the team is MIA for a prolonged period, and it's on one unit or one guy to go out and win the game. And Allmark did that. And that's why that is your 22-23 Vezina Trophy winner right there. And that's why that's a guy that I think can, that's a goalie that can get you to a Stanley Cup, man. And there's only a handful of them out there. And one can be such a game changer, as you know.
Do you want to close it out with it? Do you have anything about the Linus goalie goal that happened?
Did we talk about that last week?
No,
that happened over the weekend.
That happened over the weekend, yeah.
Yes. Well, speaking of winning games in every way you can imagine, truly one of the final frontiers of ways to put a nail in the casket of a game is the goalie goal. Very nostalgic for me as a guy who grew up a Marty Brodeur fan. I think guys who grew up watching Marty and idolizing Marty are bigger fans of the goalie goal and goalies just getting involved in the play in general. I think that's kind of how that's built into my DNA now, because I grew up watching Marty shoot for empty nets and play the puck in the corner, which he did so well that the NHL had to put extra paint in the corners and not let them go there anymore. I'm just such a big fan of goalies getting involved in the play in unconventional ways. Like when, you know, when there's a 50-50 puck coming across the blue line and it's halfway between the goalie and, you know, the opposing team's forward most forward, and they're coming at each other and like meeting up near the blue line to like try to get the puck. Like it is, I love when goalies go out and do that. Mm-hmm. We talked on this podcast about Linus going for it in the Winter Classic, which I think mm-hmm. would have been the most electric moment in Bruins history. This was certainly up there, just being in a standard game, but it's not the first time Linus has gone for it this season. And it was really cool. That was the first goalie goal in Bruins history. So really, really cool to see, and
very cool.
Couldn't happen to a more deserving guy having a better season. Like,
for sure.
I really hate to say it, but like, there's been so many moments this season that like you look back and say like, all right, if we do end up winning the cup this year, this has all the makings of like the best season in franchise history. Like you have the goalie goal, you have, you know, winning the Winter Classic at Fenway Park against the Penguins. Like so many of these like good vibe moments along the way.
Yeah.
We've talked about this on the show before. Like you start to pick up like moments that are going to make the World Series DVD. And there's been a lot of World Series DVD moments this year.
Yeah, I feel you on that. The Ranger teams when, you know, back in the McDonough days, Henrik days, there was a lot of moments like that with those teams. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, take it how you see it, given that they didn't win anything, but.
Exactly.
I feel you on that level.
Like, it feels like the more regular season good vibes you rack up, it can either you're
it's a blessing or a curse. You're all loading how you up perform.
You're loading up more weight onto a sack full of you're loading more anvils into a big burlap sack hanging up in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And as of right now, there's 100 anvils in that stack. You can't have more anvils in there than that. And at the end of the season, it's either going to fall on the rest of the world and feel amazing because that was the heaviest sack that you could have put together and it face fucked the rest of the world, or it's coming down straight on you.
I agree.
All you can do is look up and watch it fill up and just be like, I really hope that doesn't fall on me.
Mm-hmm. And we're right there with you too. We're picking up our anvils. Patrick Kane was a major anvil. So
the heaviest one of the season.
And maybe it comes along with the territory of us, you know, being the two top teams, it seems like, for the Stanley Cup now. But
and then we're also looking have down the most the barrel expectations. Go ahead.
But we also have the most expectations now going forward.
Exactly. Patrick Kane is a huge anvil. However, we have the heaviest anvil of all coming that's not even in our bag yet, which is we are getting the 50,000-pound anvil on top of everything else going in that bag called the fucking President's Trophy.
Right.
Coming our way. So, boy, it's going to be a load.
Mm-hmm.
And all you can do is just hope it's falling on everybody else and not you.
Correct. It'll be fun. I'm really excited for Saturday.
Saturday's gonna be cool, man. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it sucks because getting into the Garden on Saturday is, I mean, these are like game one of Stanley Cup final prices. Like you're talking $275 for a balcony seat this weekend. Geez. Like it is unbelievable. Like again, there have been a couple like perfect storm games this season for ticket prices. Like it's a Saturday matinee against a regional opponent who just got way better you're on your biggest heater of the season too, or one of your biggest heaters of the season. You won 8 in a row. Like, it is just the perfect fucking storm for like people who have season tickets to be like, all right, it's time to pay for the whole last quarter of the season with this one game.
Yeah. No, seriously. Yeah. Those prices are still better than the Garden right now. So
yeah.
Ranger tickets are crazy.
I mean, it's funny. Like, I feel like there's no team in New York that puts the city into more of a, well, the Knicks, obviously the Knicks, but the Knicks haven't really gotten to the point where they can truly put New York into a frenzy. Like, they make the first round of the playoffs, and that's
basically all they have to do, though. Because then Knicks fans riot like they won the finals.
Yep. There were like Philly Super Bowl riots on Broadway after you guys like just faced Trae Young in the first round. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, the day I've long said this, the day the Knicks win a championship, even as a Boston guy who detests everything about New York sports culture, that's going to be a great day. That's going to be a fantastic day.
It's going to be, it's the longest standing. It's just going to be like the worst case of blue balls being relieved. And yep. New York will probably be wiped from the map.
Yes, fully. Fully.
Like, you think Philly parties. I think New York will destroy itself.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there hasn't been an MSG parade in, what, 30 years, just about?
94.
Yeah, just about 30 years. So.
It's going to be coming.
Yeah. It has been so funny, though. Like, there are, you know this, being a Connecticut guy, there are so many truckloads of fair-weather Rangers fans. And like, as soon as they do something good, it's every Instagram story. Everybody's got the Lady Liberty as like their IG, yeah, like away message, yeah, right now. Yeah. Like, they just come out of the fucking woodwork, man.
They're reposting the Kane post, but they weren't reposting the letter notes. The letter posts when,
yep,
they're like, we're scrapping this down and rebuilding. Even though that was like, when I saw it, I was like, that's exactly what we need.
Yep.
Thank you for being transparent. That's what I value in a sports franchise. But no, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Not many people like, and it's one of my biggest complaints about like modern sports culture. Not a lot of people like face accountability for their teams anymore. Like, not a lot of people are, nobody wants to eat the shit anymore. And I don't think anybody realizes that eating the shit is what makes it all worth it in the end. Like, it's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. We're our life now is we want as much good and as little bad as possible, which makes sense. But we kind of got into this theme a little bit today in a baseball group chat, talking about the rules changes, mm-hmm, with my family, my brothers and my cousins. And it's just talking about how these rule changes have affected the viewership and the liking of the sport and all that. And
yep,
it's like, it's crazy. Some people love the relaxness of baseball and hate how it's like, it's kind of anxiety provoking with this pitch clock. Like, I'm like, I feel rushed now and I'm not even playing. So it's, you know, life's a lot of the times about balance, and you need the good with the bad, and you can't enjoy the good as much as you can without right, the bad. So, but we could get into that next week, how we feel with some spring training under our belts with seeing these new rule changes, and get into our takes about it, because it's a pretty crazy topic right now.
I don't know how it's gotten this crazy this fast. I mean, like, we got the...
I'm happy because...
Me too.
I'm happy. We'll get into it, but, like, there's some shit. They need to fix some shit.
We got the nightmare, like, polarizing scenario. Like, we got the ugliest part of this role, like, in the Red out of the way. Immediately. The Red Sox. Yeah. Immediately. Like... That video that was going around, again, we'll get into this fully next week, but Red Sox had a spring training game where it wasn't going to decide the game or anything, but bases loaded, bottom of the ninth, last like two outs, last bat is up.
A non-baseball event ended a baseball game, basically.
Yes, exactly. And he's out on a called strike three from a hitter clock violation.
And like, that's just the complete opposite, I feel, of making the game more exciting.
Yeah, but they are getting the fruits. Like, it's shaving 25 minutes off games, which is crazy. Like, but I mean, we'll both have our takes on this. And like,
yeah,
I've always wanted robot umps, but otherwise I'm a big leave baseball alone guy. It's an acquired taste either way. It really is an acquired taste, no matter what you do to it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll break down the logistics of like what's changing in Major League Baseball this year. Talk about how maybe it impacts our teams and like our skill sets and like the way our players go about things. Talk about how it impacts the rest of the league. And we will, we'll have a Rangers Bruins Saturday matinee to talk about next week as well.
Yeah.
But for now, anything else for the people, Big T?
No, I'm eyeing Twitter to see if Kane's going to make his debut tonight. I don't know if it's going to happen. I think I heard Saturday might be his debut.
You guys in Philly tonight, right?
Yeah, we're in Philly at 7:30.
Yeah, get him out there, please.
I hope so. I'm hoping he'll be out there, but I'm hitting up some beat writers right now on Twitter to figure that out. So, Ranger fans, if you're listening, hopefully by the time you hear this, you'll be enjoying some Patrick Kane highlights in a Ranger sweater.
Yeah. You order your custom jersey yet?
No.
Okay.
No. I don't got that money right now.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week. Talk some more hockey, talk some spring training, and do our regular happy March 1st. Happy March Madness month, Tom.
Yeah. Can't wait. March is going to be fun.
It is going to be a very fun time. I am very much looking forward to March as a whole. It's going to be a good one.
It for sure.
All right. Well, we hope your March is off to as good a start as ours is. And we will talk to you next week, everybody. Have a great week.
Here comes a 1-2 pitch. Red Sox win the